Behind the Bets with Doug Kazarian is presented by DraftKings, America's top-rated daily fantasy app.
Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
It is time for another Behind the Bets podcast. I know I touched on maybe doing some basketball this week. We're going to postpone that to next week when we get into Champ Week and really dive deeper into the futures and also the second half of the NBA season. There could be some MVP value, maybe some futures. I want to talk, we're talking UFC coming up with both the usual suspects, if you will, Matthew Holt, Lou Finocchiaro, just a stacked UFC 259 card. It is in the apex, but it is a pay-per-view event because we have three main events. One huge favorite in Amanda Nunes at about $11 or so. And then Adesanya puts his undefeated mark in the octagon, the main event. So we'll see if he can get there. But then we have basically a pick'em bantamweight title fight. So really strong opinions for Lou and Matthew. Usually they have a couple and then sort of don't weigh in, but really, really compelling conviction on some of these. I also want to welcome back another producer here on the pod. Travis is back with us. Travis, how are you, my man?
Doing well, Doug. How are you?
Doing well. So we're good to have you back, and we're going to have some fun stuff moving forward. Obviously, the offseason is where you can tinker, and I say NFL offseason is where you can tinker with some stuff. So we'll do some fun stuff moving forward, but straight ahead is Matthew and Lou with the UFC 259 breakdown. But before we get into that, I'm going to remind you, Mike Greenberg has brought his unmatched depth of sports knowledge and entertainment back to ESPN Radio. Keep up to date on the never-ending breaking news in the sports world by listening to his show, Greeny, weekdays from 10 to 12 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio. And you can catch the podcast version of Greeny wherever you get your podcasts.
Using the whole fist, Doc?
Big, and I mean big week in the UFC with three title fights. So we had to bring back the gentleman here, Matthew Holt, Lou Finocchiaro. Fellas, good to be with you again. I'm excited for this. I guess, Lou, I'll start with you with this Adesanya-Błachowicz fight. I mean, here's a guy who's undefeated, 20-0, but he's only minus 240 here against a guy that most people don't know how to pronounce his name. How do you see this fight playing out with Jan Błachowicz only catching about $2 here?
Further, Israel Adesanya had a kickboxing career in which he went 75-5 prior to the 20-0 UFC run. He's a savant of an athlete when it comes to mixed martial arts. His movement and precision striking and kicking on offense and his defense matrix-like movement make him an attractive fighter to like. However, he's moving from 185 into the 205 category against a fighter that feels a chip on his shoulder because he's feeling like he's the marked man. And you're right. If Adesanya really is that kind of threat, why is he only 240? I think you kind of hit it on the head, Doug. I think Błachowicz is getting undervalued here. In fact, in his last 10 fights, he is 9-1 in those fights. He's been an underdog in 9 of those fights.
That's right.
He's only been a favorite once against an older Jacare Souza. I think Błachowicz I think this line is in fact too far for how up close I see this fight. I look to the Gastelum fight that went 5 rounds with Adesanya. And while Adesanya has fought guys like Romero and most recently Costa that can emulate light heavyweights, Błachowicz has never faced someone as fast and quick and moves like Adesanya. So there's a lot of intrigue here. I'm less convinced on a side, but more convinced that it's going to take Błachowicz some time to solve Adesanya, or it's going to take Adesanya some time to wear through Błachowicz. And so for that matter, I think 2.5 rounds over is where I'm going to put my position on this main event.
Yeah, Matthew, you're a guy usually involved in totals. What's your take on this main event?
I like Lou's take on the total a bit, but at the end of the day, I actually think Israel Adesanya is going to knock him out. And here's a kind of a frame of reference here. remember Anderson Silva when he went up to 205 and, you know, he fought James Sandman Ervin and Forrest Griffin. And Forrest Griffin was a big 205er with devastating power. And people said, ooh, well, how's Anderson going to do at 205? Well, he knocked Forrest Griffin out with a jab. He knocked Sandman out with one punch. Speed kills. And Israel Adesanya has more speed than anyone we have ever seen in the history of the UFC. And it's possible that the three of us all connect 5 years from now when we're doing a pod, and that pod is talking about the greatest ever in the history of the UFC, Israel Adesanya. This guy is on a whole nother level. We have seen him fight to the level of his competition before, a sort of slow-paced, low-risk effort against Yoel Romero. The Gastelum fight was close, but in the big fights when, hey, can he beat Whitaker? Bam, he dusted Whitaker. Well, how's he going to do against an undefeated Costa who's so big and strong? No problem, dusted him. I think this is a statement and a legacy fight for a guy who cares about his legacy. And for that reason, I think at some point in the later rounds, we're going to see Jan Blachowicz, who's been knocked out plenty of times in his career, probably go to sleep.
How much of this fight will be on the ground? Because we've seen in the apex with the smaller cage that fighters who have been on the bottom when grappling have been able to get to that fencing, and that has helped prolong the fight. Matthew, how much do you think this will be on the ground?
Very little. Adesanya is difficult to take down. And Jan Blachowicz, who has a wonderful ground game at 38 years old, he doesn't have the speed and timing anymore to get takedowns, especially over a really quick Adesanya. Blachowicz at 38 years old has become a power puncher. He's become a really good striker who wins most of his fights by knockout. Three of his last four wins are by knockout. I just don't think at 38 years old, the only way this goes to the ground is if they get caught in a scramble, I think.
Lou, Dana White was sort of annoyed, I think is probably the best way to put it, with Gon just sort of grinding out a win in the main event, talking about how, you know, he wants excitement, basically, especially the guys who are looking to be in those marquee fights. With this sort of fight, and Adesanya has shown kind of the knockout thrilling wins and then the grinders, how, do you think any recent comments by Dana could impact either this fight or maybe some of the other championship fights?
Not whatsoever. And I also honestly think that Matthew's forceful opinion on Adesanya is quite a public opinion. And I can't wait to watch the fight because I don't think it's quite that one-sided.
How so?
Because I do believe Blachowicz can use wrestling. He's the well more rounded fighter. And he's going to be the much bigger man. Adesanya is going to go into the he'll hit weigh-ins at 190. Blachowicz will make the 205 and fight at 2 1/4. So yes, speed does kill, but Adesanya's never faced one punch from that kind of force, and he's going to face a couple rounds of it. This is a much closer fight than people think.
I love it when you guys disagree, because there's just such good points on both sides. It's going to be interesting. But yeah, we always got to remind our listeners that just because you make weight at a certain weight on Friday, like, it's going to go up to your natural weight. And you, we've seen drastic changes just once the weight cutting is over. So let's go to the next fight. Obviously pretty lopsided with the money lines of Nunes and Anderson. You're looking at like minus 1100 in that range. I mean, there's 1250 offshore. I mean, the straddle, which is the difference between the favorite and the underdog, just gets wider and wider, as we know from all sports, as the money lines go up. Matthew, is there a live dog here at all?
I think there is. And I think there potentially is a live dog, you know, some people might say, well, what's the path to victory? And I think what's interesting here is that Nunez, although she has fought a couple of 45ers, she really is a 135 pounder, not a 145 pounder. And the fight with Cyborg lasted a minute. So we didn't really get to see what happens when a big, strong, and Megan Anderson is big and strong, 145er can start to wear on her, can start to lean on her, because we have seen times in the past, and we're going back a while now, like the Katz and Gano fight where she was taken and down late and Zingano hit her with all those elbows and punches. And in some of these fights, she does seem to slow down a bit. So I really like the over in this fight. At 1.5 rounds, I think if Megan Anderson learned anything from that Cyborg fight is that you cannot rush in and go blow to blow for a KO in the first 30 seconds against Amanda Nunes, because she is just too devastating of a striker. So with that being said, this is a women's fight with a total of 1.5 over minus 120. I think that's where the real value lies here. I expect Megan Anderson to come out and be a little bit more controlled here. She's the bigger woman. She has huge height and reach advantages in this fight. She may look to use them. She's a real bull when it comes to grappling because of her size. I'm not sure if Megan Anderson at the end of the day will have enough to get it done, but I think this thing lasts well beyond the 7.5 minutes that this total is set at. And I really like the over 1.5 rounds. And if you forced me to make a play on a side here, I would literally take the underdog, and I might even take the underdog by KO round 4.
Interesting. Lou, do you usually like your dogs, a live dog here at all?
Not in my opinion. I do tend to agree with the over. I think it usually does take Amanda a little time, especially at 45, to kind of figure her opponents. But I don't give Megan Anderson much of a chance, no.
Okay, let's go to the third matchup. And obviously a much more competitive fight, according to odds makers, Jan and Sterling, about a pick'em. I mean, there's some 115. You know, we're looking at a pick'em here, coin flip fight. Lou, any opinion here, please?
Strong opinion. This is a fight we talked about, I think, on this podcast in December before it was canceled the first time. Jan said it was canceled because of visa issues. I will tell you that it was canceled because Jan needed to go from Muay Thai, which is a striking-based camp that he's been based at his whole career, to move to Florida's AT&T so he could fight and train with various kinds of grapplers and wrestlers. That's the real reason this fight was put off. And not only did it upset Sterling, what further upset Sterling and his camp was the fact that Jan's path to the championship was through a 40-some-year-old Uriah Faber and then Jose Aldo. While Aldo is still relevant, he's not top 10. And so Sterling, in the meantime, has had to go through guys like Stamen, Munoz, Rivera, Sandhagen, and he's had to earn his way to this position. I think he's faced the much more competent level of competition. He's going to be the bigger man when they stand in there. And really, when you assess this fight, Peter Yan has to keep this on the feet. And let's not underestimate his wrestling. He's a Russian, decorated in master of sport. So he's around wrestling and grappling, but he prefers to strike. Aljamain Sterling is going to look like Khabib Nurmagomedov in this fight. And he's going to, as opposed to Gagne, this may not be exciting, but this will be all Sterling, all wrestling, and maybe not so much striking. If it does stay on the feet for 5 rounds, Jan will win this fight.
Love it. I love the conviction. Matthew, anything?
I completely agree with Lou. I don't know that. I think of the three title fights, this one is probably going to be the most boring, but I don't know how Petr Yan stops the wrestling of Aljamain Sterling. I mean, that wrestling from the Sierra Longo fight team guys is amazing. Aljamain might be the best wrestler under 155 pounds. At the end of the day, I think he's just going to continue to get takedown after takedown. Now, I have no doubt that Yan is a tough guy. Most of those Russians are tough guys, and I think he's going to hang in there for a long time, might be able to avoid the sub. I do favor the over 3.5 rounds in this spot, but I'm with Lou. At the end of the day, I have a heavy lean toward Aljamain Sterling and already have placed my wagers accordingly.
Okay, I love it. So you guys are both on Sterling in this bantamweight match, and I think it's going to be a grinder and just kind of like a domination and likely maybe a unanimous decision. We'll see. Okay. So obviously a huge card, and we're not going to, so we did the three title fights, but let's go to the, we're going to bounce around to picks people like. Let's go to the, now the prelims card, according to the ESPN schedule. Dominic Cruz, obviously really popular fighter against Kenny, and Matthew, you're on a play here.
Yeah, I laid the short chalk with Casey Kenney here. This is a guy who's really coming up, fighting out of Arizona. Lou kind of knows that gym well, where Casey Kenney fights out of. This is a guy who I think's really starting to put the pieces together. His only loss in the UFC is to Merab Dvalishvili, who at the end of the day just kind of wrestle grinds anybody to death. And that was a super competitive fight. But what I think he showed recently, especially in his last fight against Nathaniel Wood, is that this guy has amazing footwork. And his footwork, you know, Dominic Cruz was always known as having maybe the best footwork in MMA, although he hasn't won a fight in 5 years. Casey Kenney has really good footwork, a lot better power than you would think for a guy that only has two knockouts. His hands are good. His wrestling is amazing. I think he's the total package here. Dominic Cruz isn't excessively old. This is a guy who, unfortunately, we never got to see enough of him in his prime. He's still only 35 years old, but injuries have really derailed his career. He's only fought twice since June of 2016, and those were a really embarrassing one-sided loss to Cody Garbrandt and then a knockout to Henry Cejudo in a fight that was pretty competitive leading up to the knockout. And while Dominic Cruz disputed the knockout, he got knocked out. And at the end of the day, Casey Kenney's taller than Cejudo. He's bigger than Cejudo. It just feels like this is probably going to be a Casey Kenney spot. And the one chance Dominic Cruz had probably of winning this fight was that his footwork would be really just light years above Casey Kenney, and he would be able to confuse him and kind of land those peppering short, I don't want to call them soft, but softer strikes that he, you know, he sort of used in his win against TJ Dillashaw years ago back in 2016. But I think Casey Kenney's footwork is too good for Dominic Cruz at this point. If it goes to the ground, I think Casey Kenney, the bigger, stronger wrestler, will have the advantages there. And I laid the short price with Casey Kenney.
All right, Lou, anything to add, or are we moving on?
No, that is really excellent, and I could not have said it better myself.
Okay, let's jump down to Benavidez and Askarov. We have a similar price fight here. Askarov undefeated, but does have one draw in the UFC. He's about a -130 favorite. Matthew, back to you on this one.
Yeah, what a fight this is. You know, what really worries me here, this is like a double whammy for me, a double positive in terms of betting Askarov. Not only do I love the fight eagle Russian fighter here, Bullet Askarov, who, to your point, 12-0, but his one draw, by the way, a split draw, was against Brandon Moreno, who just fought the champion Figueiredo to a draw. So we're talking about the clear number two guy at 125 pounds. Askarov fought him to a draw, and he owns wins since over Tim Elliott and Alexander Pantoja, who's coming off a win himself. So this guy has proven to be excellent, proven to be competitive, and if not just competitive, better than some of the elite 125 pounders in the world already. And on the other side, we have Joseph Benavidez, who's certainly at the tail end of his career now. And what really worries me about Benavidez is this is a guy who, you know, going into that 2018 said, look, I'm going to make one more run. After he lost to Sergio Pettis, he said, I'm going to make one more run. I got one more run, title run in me. And he fought three guys in a row who stylistically really fit his style in the wrestle grinder style, and Alex Perez, Dustin Ortiz, and a fading, aging Jussie Formiga. And he was able to win all three of those fights to earn himself yet another title fight at 125, where he lost to Figueiredo. Figueiredo didn't make weight, so they ran it back. Figueiredo choked him out in the first round in the rematch. Joseph Benavidez is now 0-5 in title fights in the UFC. And I'm always worried about the motivation of a guy who just came off a run where he said, this is going to be my last run. I got one more big run in me, and it didn't work out. Now he's coming back again saying, I might have one more big run in me. I don't know. I think the last big run was the last run for Joseph Benavidez. I heavily favor Askarov here.
Interesting. Okay. I like the breakdown there. That's one of my you know, I haven't dug deep into the card, but that's certainly one that caught my eye as well. So let's keep it moving.
If I may.
Oh, yeah, please.
If I may. Here's what kept me from Askarov. Joe Benavidez's body of work is unapproachable. Askarov, yes, beat Pantoja, comes in with momentum. I don't read this the same way Matthew does. What I'm scared of here is the relationship Benavidez and his wife have with the UFC. All we heard when Benavidez got beat by Figueiredo the second time was that he doesn't want to go out like that. If this fight's razor close, I don't think Askarov's going to get the nod, and I'm scared. That's why I think I had to mention that.
Yeah, fair. There's always storylines and narratives that we can apply in all these sports too, especially, I mean, we're talking NBA All-Star break coming up this weekend. There's a lot of interesting stuff going on. Some guys, some teams checked out. LeBron didn't travel with the team. I mean, there's always stuff like that and kind of nuances that it's good to bring up because it's certainly applicable. Okay, final fight, I believe. Oh, no, we're going down to the prelims now, I believe, unless I'm missing one. Oh, no, yeah, it is final fight on the prelim card. And that's back to you, Matthew, with Bontorin here, a dog here that you like.
Yeah, I think this is an interesting fight. So historically, what's been interesting the last 2 years is we have seen a ton of love, and for the most part, deservedly so, for all of the fighters coming out of the City Kickboxing camp. And for anybody who's not familiar, that's where Israel Adesanya trains. And they are producing a lot of great fighters these days out of that City Kickboxing gym. And a lot of times what happens is what we've seen when Israel Adesanya fights is the UFC tends to stack the card with the City Kickboxing guys. And here we have another one in Kai Kara France, who for whatever reason tends to be a giant favorite in almost all of his fights. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that the City Kickboxing guys have so much success. And I think we have four of them on this card as well. And I think at least three of them are heavy favorites. Ulberg is a big favorite as well. I've made some money betting against Kai Kara France. I bet Brandon Moreno against them. I bet Brandon Royval is a big underdog against Kai Kara France. And Brandon Royval didn't just beat him. He beat him on the feet where you're not supposed to be able to beat Kai Kara France. He ended up submitting him, but he chopped him up on the feet first. This is a guy in Kai Kara France who came into the UFC as a knockout puncher. Yet all four of his wins inside the UFC are by decision. He's never earned a knockout win inside the UFC. I don't actually think he has enough power to get knockouts inside the UFC. And what we've seen is he comes out on fire for a minute or two, and if he doesn't have success immediately, he tends to get in trouble really quickly, Kai Kara France. And on the other side, we have a guy and Bontorin, who is an absolute beast, and he's a little bit underrated here, I think, because he's 2-1 in the UFC. His one loss is to Ray Borg, but Ray Borg missed weight by 9 pounds in that fight. If you remember, that was the fight where the UFC finally said, look, Borg, you can't fight at 125 anymore. You're not just missing weight. You're missing weight by a whole weight class. And made him go up to 135. And Bontorin was somewhat competitive in that fight. Ray Borg has the same exact style as Bontorin and probably weighed 30 pounds more than him that night in that fight. And the Paiva fight, he doesn't get enough credit for beating Paiva, who's a really good fighter, because the fight ended up getting stopped by a cut. And if you go back and watch that fight, because sometimes people discredit fighters when it gets stopped by a cut and they go, oh, it was a cut. He didn't really hurt him. He hits Paiva with the cleanest right you will ever see that just opens him up and forces the stoppage. So it was a wonderful landed shot that actually got the stoppage there. Kai Kara France has not been good in the favorite role, especially lately. I'm going to continue to fade him and go with the bigger, stronger. And the guy who I think, and I don't think Kai Kara France has showed the chops to stop the takedowns. I think Bontorin's going to get the takedown early. He's going to continue to get the takedowns and probably submit Kai Kara France in the second round.
Ooh, calling in the second round. And submission. You like the submission win second round. I like it. Okay, let's keep it moving. We're still on the we're now going to the prelims, and this is your top play, Matthew. And I would say the last play of the prelims card. Again, I'm using the ESPN.com schedule with Elliot and Espinoza, and you like the small dog here.
Yeah, I mean, Tim Elliott, I could not believe these odds. Every time I see Tim Elliott, because this one continues to flip back and forth as an underdog, I just bet it again and again. These guys are both 1-3 in their last four. But when you look at Jordan Espinoza, his losses are to Matt Schnell and David Dvorak. His only win in his last four is against Mark De La Rosa. His only two wins in his UFC career are against Eric Shelton and Mark De La Rosa, both of whom aren't even with the UFC anymore because they weren't UFC caliber. On the other side, Tim Elliott may also be 1-3 in his last four, but the losses are to Askar Askarov, who we already talked about, the undefeated phenom at 125 pounds, who's also on this card. Divison Figueiredo, the defending champion at 125 pounds, and Brandon Royval, a top five fighter at 125 pounds. So his three losses are to three of the top five ranked guys at 125 pounds, and he's coming in off a win over Ryan Benoit. And Ryan Benoit is a really tough guy. This is a guy in Tim Elliott who has wins over Luis Smoka, and has fought some of the, you know, fought Joseph Benavidez, fought Ali Bagatinov, who fought for the title. I mean, he has been in there with the best of the best, including fighting Demetrius Johnson for the title. I was there at the Pearl at the Palms when Tim Elliott fought Demetrius Johnson for the 125-pound crown and locked in a guillotine in round two, and it looked like Demetrius may have to tap. DJ was able to make it to the bell and end up winning a decision against Elliott, but Elliott almost became the flyweight champion of the world. These two are just light years apart in terms of talent, in terms of ability. Jordan Espinoza is the bigger guy, but he fades terribly in fights. I'm surprised he's still in the UFC, considering he's lost three of four against lesser competition, but the 125-pound weight class is a little bit thin. I think at the end of the day, this one's easy. Tim Elliott's going to go ahead and get it done. And four of the eight losses for Jordan Espinoza by submission, what does Tim Elliott do? He submits, guys. Tim Elliott gets this one done easy. Submission, round two.
Ooh, you like it. You like it easy. Any opinion there, Lou?
Yeah, Tim Elliott, since he made the move to follow his girlfriend and train with James Krause at Glory MMA, has caught a career resurgence, and I really like where Matthew's going on that fight.
So you support the call as well. Okay. Next is a play you have, Lou. Brady and Matthews were on the undercard as well.
Undercard, this is maybe the third or fourth fight.
Yeah, early prelims, excuse me.
Yes, sir. Early prelims, but just a fire of a fight. Two welterweights, both well-rounded. Matthews from Australia, maybe the more wrestling-based fighter that's still gaining some confidence with his striking. Sean Brady, a guy that fights with Felder out in Philly, Eddie Alvarez. This guy's a very tough, well-rounded fighter. If you look at the numbers here, Elliott lands 3 significant strikes a minute and receives two, so his output's okay. Brady lands 5.5 and receives 4.5, so he's much busier on his feet. You'd expect then that Matthews would be the fighter with more takedowns per minute, but he's not. Brady still beats him by one full takedown per 15 minutes. And Sean Brady was preparing for Bilal Muhammad in this fight, who now has been taken and put into an opportunity for another fight. So Jake Matthews comes in here, and in my opinion, he's just a little bit less capable a fighter than Muhammad was. I like the fact of what Brady brings to the fight and the fact that he was training for Muhammad. I don't want to say he gets an easier take, but I think he's underpriced at 2.25 or so, and I don't take very many favorites.
Yeah, no, that was my that was the thing that jumped out at me. It's like, oh, you really typically aren't favorites. And if you do, you're parlaying them. You think there's just value, and we talk about it all the time with all sports. There's value on favorites at times. In your eyes, this seems to be one. Matthew, your final play is the very first card. Very first fight. I've been having some trouble with that word. Very first fight on this entire card, the early prelims. Bautista and Jones, take it away.
Yeah, I really like Mario Bautista in this fight. And again, like Lou, I don't like to play very many favorites either, but this is one where I thought, man, the advantages here are significant for the 27-year-old from the MMA lab, Mario Bautista, who's going to have a 3-inch height advantage, a significant reach advantage against Trevin Jones. Look, the only loss in his career for Mario Bautista is to Corey Sandhagen, a top 4 ranked bantamweight in the world. And we've seen what Sandhagen's done lately with his amazing win over Marlon Moraes. So that win has certainly aged well. And since then, he's come back with a decision win over Jin Su San, a TKO win over Miles John. This kid is really good, well-rounded, great wrestling, big-time chops, big shoulders for the division, 5'9", tall, big, and strong for 135 pounds, punches with power. His only weakness is he does get a little wild sometimes with the strikes. And for that reason, I think there's been a little bit of love on Trevin Jones here. Really short at 5'6", 30-year-old coming out of Guam. I'm not sure he has the chops to necessarily compete with the best in the UFC. He was able to ended up with a no contest in his UFC debut, a fight where, you know, he had his moments against Timur Valiyev, which is not a ranked fighter, but it's certainly a fringe guy. If we were ranking the top 30 in the division, Valiyev may be there. I thought he looked okay in his debut, but this is a really short fighter known for whipping power punches out there. Yet for a guy known as a power puncher at 5'6", he only has 2 career knockouts, despite the fact that 17 of his 18 fights have come outside the UFC and not in major organizations either, in some of the more regional, lower ranking organizations that there is. So I don't believe in the power of Trevin Jones. I don't believe he has a puncher's chance here. I think Mario Bautista, too big, too strong. I actually think this is the UFC giving a showcase to a really promising young prospect in Mario Bautista.
Wow, really thorough there, fellas.
May I just quickly excuse the interruption. Mario Bautista, Casey Kenny, and Kyler Phillips, 3 fighters on this card, all train at the MMA lab here in Phoenix, along with Sugar Sean O'Malley. Excuse me. Those 4 bantamweights sharpen each other's steel every single day at practice. And I completely agree with Matthew there.
I like it. Awesome. Thank you for adding that part, because, you know, so much of it is this fight is new. I mean, all handicapping, you have to factor in, the transitive property, right? Like, who have they fought, common opponents, stuff like that. Then there's the nuances of who you train with each other. Then the narratives we've talked about, sometimes the UFC getting involved, maybe stacking a card a certain way. So all this together, you have to put in the meat grinder, and you guys do a wonderful job of sort of prioritizing which variable matters most. So guys, we really appreciate it. We know you put in the time, and it really shows. And let's hope a lot of winners on this podcast here.
Thanks guys. Best of luck this weekend, Lou. Thanks, Doug. Talk to you guys later.
You got it.
And good luck to everyone. This is an outstanding fight card. Thank you, Doug.
So you're telling me there's a chance.
Matthew and Lou were presented by DraftKings, America's top rated daily fantasy app. Download the DraftKings app today and use code Doug to get in on all the action. So I want to thank both of those guys, obviously rolling up the sleeves and getting in deep there. So a couple total plays in the main events, both like Sterling and obviously some plays on the prelims and throughout the card. So it should be an exciting UFC card. Really, really, really good with 3 title fights there. So I appreciate their insight there. Travis, good to have you back on board. And thanks to everyone for downloading and rating, reviewing, all that good stuff, subscribing as well. And we'll catch you back here next week.